Yeah.
A variety, huh?
Okay. Well, first off, just for the tape, today is January 12th, 2018, and we're looking at Deuteronomy chapter 2. So, good question, David. Where are all these places, and where are we? What is going on here? This
Sinai, kind of.
Right. So, I've drawn a map up here to start the discussion, and I guess I'll put this here. If we look in chapter 2, let's all start at the very beginning again, and let's walk through it. In verse 3, it says, turn north. So, yes, they are in the Sinai area. They're in this region here. So, over here, I'll just write Sinai. We've got, what's this number here?
Nile.
Okay. And what I've done here with these dotted lines is I've drawn modern Israel. This is modern Israel today. And you have the country of Jordan on this side. And this is Israel. And what is this here?
Sea of Galilee.
Sea of Galilee.
With water.
Yeah. And what is this river?
Jordan
River. What is this sea?
Dead
Sea.
Salt.
It, yeah, in the Bible it's called the Salt Sea. Yama Melech. And this is, today we call it the Sea of Galilee, but they call it the Kinneret in Hebrew, and that's what it's in the Bible as well. Okay, so let's try to get a feel for where we are. Verse 4. Give the people these orders. You're about to pass through the territory of your relatives, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. And essentially, without going into a bunch of geography, it's in this region here. Okay? Seir. Well, let's go ahead and...
But the people have known all this theory.
Like, sorry.
I'm struck because I don't ever remember him. Remember any things from God saying, avoid this, do this, pass through this, and this is like Esau. Was that well known that was Esau's name?
Yes. Let's go. If you go back to Genesis, okay, just flip to Genesis.
No, but they didn't know it.
Well, this record is being written down much later. So this would be during the time of the kings of Judah that most scholars understand, because it'll talk about, it'll say Hebron was built 7 years before this Egyptian city. And so you can tell this is a historian who's putting these records together for people to understand the context. But for those who might not know all this story with Esau and Jacob, let's go to Genesis 32. Genesis 32. And what is the backstory here? The backstory is Isaac. Well, first off, there's Abraham. And Abraham comes from what we would call Syria or Iraq today, would come down, and God told him to go to Canaan. And so he comes to Canaan. He has his son Isaac, and he grows up in this land. And then Isaac has twins, and those twins are called Jacob and Esau. And they have a fight, because basically Jacob tries to seize, or he takes the birthright of Esau through some trickery and through taking advantage of Esau's weaknesses. Esau's not a very wise character. He's sloppy. And Jacob takes advantage of that. And because of that, his brother Esau wants to kill him. So what does Jacob do? He runs away from Esau. And so he goes off into Aram, which is what we would kind of call today Syria, in this area up here. And this is where his father's or his grandfather's family is coming from. And he gets married here. He actually ends up with four wives. And he brings them back from Aram. this way, and they are about here. And it says in Genesis 32, Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. Verse 3, Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So this is the area that Esau is in, and it's called Edom. And I'll just make it more specific to traditionally. Edom is kind of south of the Dead Sea.
And
on
Moab
the Jordan
south a little bit.
Right, so Moab would be here. Ammon would be here, which today in Jordan, the capital is Amman, and Amman comes from Ammon. And then it talks about Amorites that are in this area too, and what we just read in Deuteronomy. We'll get to them in a second. So Ammon, Moab, Edom. But in our story of Genesis 32, it says Esau, Edom, Jacob's coming in with his tribe, his clan, and they're about here. Edom, or Esau, comes up here. Let's keep reading. Verse 4. This is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. So Laban is his father-in-law. Laban is up here in Syria, and this is the country of Aram, the region of Aram. I've been staying up there, but now I'm coming back. And verse 6. The messengers returned to Jacob. So his messengers went down, they met Esau, and they came back and they said, Esau, your brother is coming with what?
400
men. 400 men today doesn't really sound that much, but back then, 400 was a lot. You'll remember that Abraham had a group of men that was about that many, and he fought, was it 6 kings or something? So it's a large troop of men. Verse 7, in great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups. And Jacob is afraid. And it says that, let's see, verse 11, he prays to God, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, you told me to go back to your country, and I will make you prosper. Verse 11, he says, save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. Okay, so this is the relationship of Jacob and Esau. And Jacob, what's another name for Jacob?
Israel.
And what's another name for Esau?
Edom.
Okay, so you have to keep all of this in mind for future history. Israel and Edom. And this is what we're going to be talking about today. He comes here, and we all know what happens in this story, just 32. It's a happy story. They hug, they kiss, and there's peace. And Esau lets him cross over in Canaan, and they basically make a pact of peace. And everything's fine. And that's the end of this story.
Genesis.
Yes.
Yeah. Was Canaan all the way down to the Sinai too, or more in the middle Canaan line?
Yeah, more in the middle.
More in the middle, yeah.
But let's go back to Deuteronomy 2. So Deuteronomy 2, verse 4. Give the people these orders. You are about to pass through the territory of your relatives, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. You remember back in Genesis 32, it mentioned Seir.
Right.
And Seir is another name for Edom or Esau. He's got like 4 names, I think. The fourth one will come probably in a bit. And he says here, they will be afraid of you, but be very careful. Verse 5, do not provoke them to war, for I will not give you any of their land, not even enough to put your foot on. I have given Esau the hill country of Seir as his own. You are to pay them in silver for the food you eat and the water you drink. Okay. So, this is our first section of this story. Do we remember what happened in Numbers? We went through the book of Numbers and we had this exact same episode play out. It's in Numbers chapter 20. So we need to turn to Numbers chapter 20. Numbers is the fourth book of the Bible. Numbers 20. Verse 14.
Numbers 20, verse 14.
So when, if you just refresh in your memory what we just read in Deuteronomy 2, what is Moses and the people of Israel commanded to do? What did we just read? Numbers 2. Sorry, Deuteronomy 2. What are they commanded to do or not to do?
To go up north at this point.
Are they supposed to come and stop in Edom?
No.
No. Why?
We're not allowed to take the land, but they're supposed to
also... Esau's land.
Because it's Esau's land.
It's Esau's land.
Right?
But they can ask for water and some food.
Right. That's clear, right? Everybody's got that,
right?
So let's see what Numbers 20 says. Verse 14. Moses sent messengers from Kadesh. So this is another thing. They're in Kadesh. Kadesh Barnea. And this is somewhere down here on, I think it's on the Sinai side today with the modern borders, but it's very close to the border of what we call Israel today. They're in Kadesh, Kadesh Barnea. And he says this. He sends messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. What does this remind us of? What did we just read in Genesis? Jacob sent messengers to Esau.
Right.
So we have the same story playing out.
Right.
This is what your brother Israel says. You know about all the hardships that have come on us. Our ancestors went down into Egypt, and we lived there many years. The Egyptians mistreated us and our ancestors, but when we cried out to the Lord, he heard our cry, and he sent an angel and brought us out of Egypt. Now we are here at Kadesh, a town on the edge of your territory. Please let us pass through your country. We will not go through any field or vineyard or drink water from any well. We will travel along the King's Highway. The King's Highway, by the way, is on this side of the Jordan, on the eastern side. It's the King's Highway. So, something like that.
And that's Isaiah 19, Egypt to Assyria.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure. Verse 18. Numbers 20, verse 18.
So, in fact, in your drawing, Edom is a bit bigger.
Yes.
Well, if they're going to go up the King's Highway, they're going to actually be in Edom.
So, in this story,
yeah.
Edom... has expanded.
Right.
It's in a larger area. Good observation. So what does Edom say? Can they pass through the territory?
No way.
You may not pass through here. Verse 18. If you try, we will march out and attack you with the sword. The Israelites replied, we will go along the main road. If we or our livestock drink any of your water, we will pay for it. We only want to pass through on foot, nothing else. Again, they answered, you may not pass through. Then Edom came out against them with a large and powerful army. Since Edom refused to let them go through their territory, Israel turned away from them. So, this is a bit of a different story than what we just read in Deuteronomy 2. In Deuteronomy 2, it's more conciliatory. It's more, no, don't go through there, because it's your brother's territory. But here in Numbers, there's more of like aggression, I would say, obviously. But they didn't fight.
The story is more practical. It's more like two nations rather
than
God's
right.
Story.
Deuteronomy is looking back and giving an interpretation, I think, of, because Sharon mentioned last week, Deuteronomy is a recap. It's a summary of what we've read in Numbers, Exodus, mainly. Those are the two historical books when it comes to the people coming out of Egypt. Leviticus is, you know, laws related. Numbers and Exodus are telling us how they came from Egypt into the land. And Deuteronomy is a sermon. It's explaining to you in a religious or a spiritual sense why it happened the way it happened.
But it's no accident, and we haven't got there, and you haven't got there, that the Haftarah is from
Obadiah,
which is basically saying exactly that you tried to come through, I can't remember it exactly, but you came through and you're going to be punished because you would not support your brethren.
Right. So,
and did they get with their brothers after these generations?
Well, right, I mean, this is hundreds of years.
Because in the sermon, it says, your brothers.
Right.
And I gave this to, Esau.
So let's look at what Deuteronomy has to say about this whole situation. First off, look at Deuteronomy 32. Deuteronomy 32. Chapter 32. This is a very fascinating section here in verse 7.
Deuteronomy 32, verse 7, I think to 9.
It says here, "Remember the days of old. Consider the generations long past. Ask your father, and he will tell you. Your elders, and they will explain to you. When the Most High," this is talking about God, "the Lord, gave the nations their inheritance, when he divided all mankind, he set up boundaries for the peoples, according to the number of the sons." What do your Bibles have there?
Heavenly assemblies.
Okay, so you have heavenly assemblies, which is angels.
I call the number of the children of Israel.
Okay, and you've got according to the children of Israel. And there are these two translations, and the Masoretic text and the Dead Sea Scrolls, they have sons of God, which in this, angels you can have in the Greek, because that's where we get the term messenger from. But anyways, there, when you come to Daniel and it talks about the prince of Persia stopped me, this was Michael. Or Gabriel was talking, but then Michael came and fought the prince of Persia, and then there was the prince of Greece. So this is that same thinking here, that every country has an angel, or it has some sort of representative in the heavenlies.
Oh God.
Yeah, well, yeah. And
I've never seen that. Because he goes on in verse 9, "For the Lord's portion is his people, and Jacob is the place of his inheritance." And yeah. I've always seen this as in a very sort of nice Zionist verse.
Yes, well, for sure. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is the God of Israel.
Right.
I mean, and that's definitely clear.
But how interesting to think that there's more geographic than for all people.
Right, okay, so this is where I'm coming for today in Deuteronomy chapter 2. Why did Deuteronomy say, don't stop here and take some land from Edom? What did Deuteronomy 2 say?
Because I've already given it to Esau.
Because I've already given it to Esau. Then he says, when you come to Moab, what are you not supposed to do?
Same thing.
And then when you come to Ammon, what are you not supposed to do?
Same thing.
And then when you come to Amorites, it said, don't worry about it. But the funny part is, when it comes to Ammon, Moab, and Edom, in Deuteronomy 2, it says, don't touch their land. Because these are their boundaries. Now, we just read here in Deuteronomy 32, it's because God laid out portions or parts of land or as inheritance, not just for Israel, because we often think of, the inheritance is for Israel, and we always think Israel, but there's a much bigger picture going on here. There's peoples all over the world.
But it's like God sets Israel there and the nations.
Right. Well, you think about, like you brought up Isaiah 19.
Yeah.
Isaiah 19.
And what year are we talking about now with this happening?
This would have been, I don't know, 1,200, 1,300 years before Christ, depending on how you try to date it. But you brought up Isaiah 19, and it talks about there's this highway that runs from Assyria to Egypt, and it goes through Israel. And at the very end of this...
But here, I have a question. Here he's talking about the territory or talking about the son of Israel? I mean, when son of Israel, then they can... Of course, in that time, probably the places where the son of Israel lives,
right,
were the same as the territory.
Right, yes.
Yeah, but that is in that time. But is that what God said?
At that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's saying it's legitimate that other people have other inheritances in their land.
So, real quick, Isaiah 19, verse 25, and when it talks about this highway coming from Assyria to Egypt, and it's coming through Israel, it says, very scandalously, I think, the Lord Almighty will bless them, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, Assyria, my handiwork, and Israel, my inheritance. It's a very big, big view of history, and God is not just being a God of one particular people, but the Lord.
It's a global view.
It's a global view, yes.
And I thought when they say the Lord this and that, it was prophetic, and like they really heard it, but this is quite different. I mean, it's saying the Lord said this, the Lord said that, like it was, rather than a sermon.
Right. Well, that's...
Why do you think that's a sermon?
Right. When we read things... We don't look at the context sometimes, or we miss it because we're reading from book to book, and we just think, like, as if one person. But there's the Lord used different authors, different writers. That's the whole thing about Scripture and the Bible, is that it's not saying it floated out of heaven, you know, and it's never been touched by human hands, but that this Bible, this word of God, has come through people. That God is inspired through the Holy Spirit.
So you're saying this is prophetic as well. It's a sermon, but it's not just a teaching sermon. It's the word of the Lord came to this person.
Right. I mean
that's what they're
doing. Right. According to tradition, things that are being passed down, right?
But it's a rewrite of history, isn't it? And so basically, what we're hearing is this is what the Lord said. I've given this land, I've divided up the nations, I've given the tribes, some of them get land, some of them don't get land, this is where so-and-so is to be. And on this particular trip, you're going to go up this way, and you're not to take that back, that land. You're to buy food, you could buy water, and if the guys there don't want it, then there's going to be trouble for you.
Yeah, and...
I mean, that's really what, it's just a, and it's what happened.
Right, it's a very... clear understanding that there are, it's a grid work of
delineation
of how we all fit into this world. It's very fascinating. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 2, because I want to bring up something else to kind of provoke you with. Let's go back to scandalous. It says in it says in verse 8, Deuteronomy 2:8, so we went on past our relatives, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. We turned from the Arava road, which comes up from Elat and Etzion Geber, and traveled along the desert road of Moab. So they're coming up in Kadesh Barnea, they're going around, and they're coming up the Arava. The Arava is this section of land that goes down to the Red Sea, or the Reed Sea. It's the Arava. And they're coming up here. It says, so we went past our relatives. Okay, verse 9. Do not harass the Moabites or provoke them to war, for I will not give you any part of their land. I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession. Now this is fascinating here. Verse 10. The Emites used to live there, a people strong and numerous and as tall as the Anakites. Like the Anakites, they too were considered Raphites, but the Moabites called them Emites. Horites used to live in Seir, but the descendants of Esau drove them out. They destroyed the Horites from before them and settled in their place, just as Israel did in the land the Lord gave them as their possession. So what's fascinating is here you have a second kind of inheritance story that's kind of hidden in the text that, you know, we just kind of pass over, that if God's given this portion of the land to Edom, they also have inherited it, and they've also driven out other nations that were there. So, you know, there's kind of a...
Jacob and Esau are different. I mean, it's
really... Right.
It's really foul.
And if you read Genesis...
Just the original.
If you read Genesis 36, it talks about the descendants of Esau. Out of Esau came these tribes, or these chiefs, and they also had 12. Genesis 36, I think it is. They also had 12 chiefs that came out of Esau, just like Israel has 12 sons, 12 tribes. So anyways, they're driving out the Emites and the Horites. Verse 13. Now get up and cross the Zered Valley. Okay, the Zered Valley is right along here. And this is the dividing line between Moab and Edom. Which the Zered Valley is basically a naha, a wadi, you know, one of these deep ditches.
So it's very big over there, huge valley.
Right, yeah, very big. So crossover, 38 years passed, I'm in verse 14. 38 years passed from the time we left Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the Zered Valley. But then that entire generation of fighting men died off. Now, when the last of these... Now, when the last of those had passed, had died, verse 18, today you are to pass by the region of Moab at Ar. Okay, so he's got them passing through Moab. And when you come to the Ammonites, do not harass them or provoke them to war, for I will not give you possession of any land belonging to the Ammonites. I have given it as a possession to the descendants of Lot. Here's one more thing to add to the story. Who is Ammon and Moab? These two people, according to Genesis chapter 19. Yes.
Go off. They Lot decides to take the land on the other side.
They are Lot's sons. Yeah. And remember, Lot was the nephew of Abraham. They're Lot's sons. Their stories. Yeah, scandalous as well. But anyways, they're Lot's sons. Esau is basically he's Abraham's grandson. And
nephews of who? I've got lost. Lot's sons are the nephews of who?
No. Lot was the nephew of Abraham, so that makes them grandnephews. Grandnephews of Abraham. Okay, verse 20. That too, now we're talking about Ammon. Okay? He's saying in verse 20, that too was considered a land of the Rephites, who used to live there. But the Ammonites called them the Zamzumites, and they were a people strong and numerous, as tall as the Anakites. The Lord destroyed them before the Ammonites, who drove them out and settled in their place. Same thing.
The Ammonites have been settled in this land connected to the Lord, driving out some other people,
the Zamzumites. And the Lord had done the same for the descendants of Esau, who lived in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites from before them. They drove them out and have lived in their place to this day. And as for the Avites, who lived in villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorites coming out from Kaphtor destroyed them and settled in their place.
So this last people down here, the Avites, whoever they were, are driven out by the Kaphtorites.
And they're the Philistines.
Sorry, the Philistines, right. I mean, basically they're the proto-Philistines or the Philistines, whatever you want to call them, are coming in from the islands, from the west.
From Crete, I think you mentioned.
Right. Yeah. Crete, Kaphtor, and...
Kaphtor is Crete, is it?
Well,
is Cyprus?
Yes, yeah. It's tough to. Yeah. What do you call Cyprus?
Kafusi.
Kafusi, yeah, right.
They're
similar.
The scriptures, and that's related to Kafto.
Yeah.
So Kafto is probably Cyprus.
And Kafto, they're probably known.
It mentions Crete, but the
Kafto. I thought they were Mycenaean from Crete. Or,
no? They were there or they're mentioned or whatever.
In Amos 9, it says that Plishtim come from Kafto.
Right. But quickly, we only have a few more minutes, and I got to get to the main point. Verse 24, set out now and cross the Arnon Gorge. See, I have given into your hand Sihon the Amorite. Okay, so now we have the Amorites. And they're somewhere in this area here. Edom, Moab, Ammon, Amorites. And begin to take possession of it, engage him in battle. This very day I will begin to put terror in all of this. And all of this, what I'm trying to get at is this. Is that why are the Amorites not on the same level as these three people? It's interesting because these three people are
Canaanites.
These are Canaanites.
Well, I think that the way Deuteronomy uses Amorite as a general description, because later on in the country on the other side of the Jordan, it says
the seven nations.
It says the sins of the Amorites are not complete, therefore
right.
Don't. You know, that's why I delayed giving the land all in one fell swoop.
Right.
That was the Amalekites.
No, no.
The sins of the...
No. That's blending two things. No.
Oh.
Amorites are is like a general, it seems to be...
A generic term for Canaanites.
In the book of Deuteronomy, not in other books.
Okay, that's good enough.
But don't quote me yet. I'm not...
So, this is something to think about. These three nations, according to Deuteronomy 2, have a certain amnesty or a certain special card. They're special in the whole...
Because they're not in Canaan, right?
But the Amorites aren't either. These guys are not in Canaan. Yeah.
But aren't there some on the other side?
Okay, maybe there are, but I'm just talking about these, Deuteronomy 2. That they're here, Sihon and is it Og?
Uh-huh.
That they are... They're free games.
So what is your reason? What do you think that, why do they have a free card?
Well, let's go to Deuteronomy 23. Chapter 23. Well, first off, it's got to be because they're actually related by blood.
Mm.
These three nations are descended from Abraham.
That's right. Where's the Amorites or not?
That just seems like common sense.
Yeah.
Deuteronomy 23, verse 3. No Ammonite or Moabite or any of their descendants may enter the assembly of the Lord, not even in the tenth generation, for they did not come to meet you with bread and water on your way when you came out of Egypt. And they hired Bilam, son of Beor, from Petor in Aram Naharaim, to pronounce a curse on you. However, the Lord your God would not listen to Bilam, but turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. Do not seek a treaty of friendship with them as long as you live. It's interesting. So, these two countries, they might have a free card, but it's not that great of a free card. Verse 7, do not despise an Edomite, for the Edomites are related to you. Do not despise an Egyptian, because you resided as foreigners in their country. The third generation of children born to them may enter the assembly of the Lord. So there's a pecking order here, whereas an Edomite is higher, and they're related closer to you, because they are... They're literally Israel's cousins,
mm-hmm.
whereas maybe Lot's sons are, they're further distantly related through Lot.
Excuse me, so this kind of warning in that time is exists until now. So now the people, I mean, in the eastern area.
It doesn't.
No.
Yeah, I mean, some people... Wood could try to interpret that, and it's but right now
the problem is you don't know who is Moabite today. There's no way to trace Moabites or Ammonites or Edomites.
And
but we do know from the text that the Amorites are not descendants of Abraham in some way.
Right, that's right.
So they've not been given the land.
Yeah.
So there's a sort of whatever for Edom, Moab, and Ammon. You can pass through, but you're not to take back their land. That's being given. And then what happens? The Amorites are told, but you didn't come out to welcome them. I mean, they've been given quite a hard deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because you didn't come out and offer them bread and wine. Well, neither did the other guys.
So check this out. Go to 2 Chronicles 20. 2 Chronicles 20. That is... I'm going to find Chronicles there. Okay, there was a king.
Is this
No, it's English. There was a king of Judah, Jehoshaphat. 2 Chronicles 20.
2 Chronicles 20.
Verse 1. The Moabites and Ammonites with some of the Meunites, or some Septuagint manuscripts have Ammonites. Okay, so that doesn't really change anything. But Moabites and Ammonites. Verse 2. The people came and told Jehoshaphat, a vast army is coming against you from Edom, or from...
I've got his coming against you from beyond the sea, from Syria.
Yeah, that's...
And they're in Hazazon Tamar, which is Ein Gedi.
Right. That, there's some different translations here. The Septuagint and the Vulgate have from Syria, but a Hebrew transcript has Edom here.
And how can they be coming from the sea if they're coming from Edom?
Welcome to the fun of biblical criticism.
Right.
But look in verse 10. Look in verse 10. This is my point. Verse 10. But now here are men from Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir. So who are coming to attack Judah? Ammon, Moab, and who's Mount Seir?
Esau,
Edom. So notice, these three, the usual suspects, are coming here. And so we got to think back to this whole story we just read in Deuteronomy 2. You know, don't take land from Edom. Don't take land from Moab. Don't take land from Ammon. Now, I have skipped over a big piece of history here because Saul, David, Solomon, all of the kings that started off the whole dynasty of Israel, they're fighting Ammon and Moab and Edom for years. So
for land or for what?
I mean, it depends on what war is fought over.
Moab in spring.
If he's talking about Eilat, then yeah, for land, for that court.
But definitely it is not for revenge.
Right. Hopefully not. But let's read this. Let's see what this says here. These three are coming to you, okay? Verse 10.
Read 2 Chronicles.
Yes, 2 Chronicles 20. But now here are men from Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, whose territory you would not allow Israel to invade when they came from Egypt. That's what we just read in Deuteronomy 2, right? Mm-hmm. The Lord would not let you invade their land when they came from Egypt. So they turned away from them and did not destroy them. See how they are repaying us by coming to drive us out of the possession you gave us as an inheritance. So again, this goes back to Deuteronomy 32, where it said God laid out portions of land to people. And so the argument here is we have our possession and they're trying to take it from us. Verse 12, our God will you not judge them, for we have no power to face this vast army that is attacking us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you. And so this story, as probably a lot of you know, ends with God saving them and the Ammonites and Moabites and Edomites being destroyed and losing. But you have the hints here of this original story coming out of Egypt
from Deuteronomy 2, again, of there are possessions of land, territory that's being marked out for particular nations.
And the guy whose spirit falls on this guy to prophesy, he prophesies with words that are taken from last week's section of Deuteronomy.
Which is?
Don't be afraid, don't panic, for the battle's not yours, but God's. Those are two phrases found in
Deuteronomy 1.
Deuteronomy 1, yeah.
Great.
Along with elsewhere.
Okay, finally, let's go to our Haftarah. Obadiah.
Obadiah is, I think it's the smallest book in the Bible. It's only one chapter. Obadiah.
Totally different picture.
It's in the Minor Prophets. So look at verse 1, the vision of Adiah, Obadiah. This is what the Sovereign Lord says about Edom. So this is important to know. The context is about Edom. This is the connection with what we've read here in Deuteronomy 2:2-30.
What happened to don't protest in Edom, because they're your brothers.
Right. What is going on? This is what's going on. We don't have time to read everything and take pieces out of it. But essentially, the prophet is saying God is going to have revenge, judgment. He's going to judge Edom for what Edom has done to Jerusalem and to Judah. Verse 8. In that day, declares the Lord, will I not destroy the wise men of Edom, those of understanding in the mountains of Esau. Verse 10, because of the violence against your brother Jacob. So this is important. We've come back to that same language. We're brothers. Deuteronomy 2 talked about don't take land from your brother Esau. You've done violence against your brother Jacob. Verse 11, on the day you stood aside while strangers carried off his wealth. Verse 12, you should not gloat over your brother, nor rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction.
Wisdom from the east.
Right. Verse 14, you should not wait at the crossroads to cut down their fugitives, nor hand over their survivors in the day of their trouble.
Basically ambushing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, taking advantage of the situation. Verse 17, but on Mount Zion will be deliverance. It will be holy, and Jacob will possess his inheritance. So we've come back to that idea again of there's an inheritance of land, a possession that's been given to Jacob.
But all these kind of you, here he said that you should not do this issue, you should not do that. That became the rule of the Moses, part of it.
Of?
Part of the Moses.
Right.
Yeah.
That you should not.
You should not do it.
You should not take land from your brother?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Obadiah takes it further, doesn't it?
He sure does.
So what Obadiah is saying, he's not going back. It's more than just the story, because Israel did not take the land.
No.
But they stood against them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they went on in history standing against Israel, or standing against Judah, mm-hmm. or standing against Jerusalem. This is written a lot later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, in Psalm 137, you don't have to turn there, but in Psalm 137, it's this famous psalm about as we sat by the rivers of Babylon and we wept. One of the lines, one of the verses in there is, remember, Lord, the children of Edom on the day of Jerusalem who said, burn it down, burn it even to its foundation. daughter of Babylon, doomed to destruction. So Edom, this is the context here, is that when much later, when Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, has come in from the north and he sacks Jerusalem here, Edom basically moves in to the southern part of Judah and maybe in alliance, probably with an alliance with Nebuchadnezzar. They take possession of certain areas. And we know particularly from Arad, which is down here near Beersheba, there's these things called the Arad letters. And they talk about, we need help because all of the Judean forces have been moved to the north to fight the Babylonians. And so the south is completely exposed. So the Edomites take advantage of that and they take this lower southern region. So anyways, it talks about in these letters that they found, you know, our southern flank is exposed.
Didn't they also kind of help the Romans?
Well, at that point, the Edomites are gone, I think. It's the Nabateans.
What Edomians?
At which point exactly?
Which you're talking about Sharon's thing?
No, when are the Edomites gone?
From what I understand, the Nabateans take over the Edomites.
Yes, but Herod, for instance, is an Edomite.
Right. But are you talking about 70 or 135 with the Romans?
I don't know.
Is it? Because Herod's basically gone in his line. I mean, I don't know the whole ethnic.
Maybe it becomes intermixed with Nabatean.
Right. But the point is this, is that according to Obadiah, and notice in verse 21, what's it say in verse 21? Because this is the verse supposed to be our linchpin this morning. It says, deliverers will go up on
Mount Zion. They shall come to Mount Zion to judge the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's.
Rule over Esau.
Yeah, so we kind of end with this thing where we started off with there's possessions that has been allotted to nations and people. But if you kind of look at the way world history plays out, I mean, we know with many peoples around the world, tribes, whatever you want to call it, there's been mass migration of people from one place to another, either because of starvation, because of famine, and peoples have been dispossessed from land that was theirs for hundreds or even thousands of years. That's just kind of world history. You can read all the history books. And Deuteronomy is saying that the Lord has laid out these possessions, but here
you can lose it based on how you act, basically.
Exactly. Just like Esau was the firstborn of Isaac, he had the birthright. He was supposed to have all of the certain blessings, but he lost it to Jacob because of his actions.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. It's like the foolish son, or you do something stupid, you can't prevent the consequence that can come sometimes.
I mean, a similar argument is made in maybe books like Numbers about Menashe, who should have been the firstborn. He should have been the biggest, but instead Ephraim becomes the biggest.
Right.
And it kind of paints a picture like he did some things that gave him bad consequences.
Well, like Reuben, when he slept with his father's wife. And then Simeon and Levi slaughtering.
So they get discredited, and so then it explains how Judah and Ephraim basically become the biggest, the leaders.
On a deeper level, isn't it to do with the fact that we are actually responsible people, or tribes, or whatever?
Yeah.
We can't just say, oh, you know, I'm the oldest, therefore I'm going to get the double blessing, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that.
Well, the interesting thing is here, though, it's God has given certain promises, and they are eternal as long as you follow.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you could take
They're not eternal if you choose
to
step away.
Yeah.
So, like with Eli's house, also, he made an eternal covenant with him, but he says, look,
yeah,
I'm not going to do it anymore because your sons are blatantly disobeying me.
That's
so
right.
Forget it.
You're talking about Eli the priest.
Yeah.
Because they had an eternal covenant too.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because we like to talk about, you know, promises being forever, And they are, as long as you obey. But we see plenty of promises that change if you willfully disobey. That's kind of a hard...
But it's the message that we've been hearing, let's face it, for weeks now. Shema Israel, it's listen and obey, listen and obey. The whole of last week, we are responsible for our own hearts and what happens to the word when it gets there.
When we get to the end of Deuteronomy, this is the whole message of Deuteronomy.
Right.
Is Shema Yisrael. It's obedience.
Right.
You know, you choose between life and death. Right. That's how the book ends. You know, are you going to obey or not?
Right.
Yeah. And if you don't obey, the deal's null and void, basically. It's a treaty he's making.
Anyways, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. I mean, yeah, on every